Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Today, we are diving into a process that is, well, it's mind-bogglingly precise, the creation of a gamete, you know, a sperm or an egg cell.
Right. And to do this, a cell has to undergo meiosis. It has to have its DNA content with what you called terrifying precision.
It is terrifying, because if just one chromosome gets misplaced, the whole thing can go wrong for the embryo.
Exactly. And to pull this off, homologous chromosomes, the ones from each parent, have to find their perfect partner inside the nucleus.
And they don't just gently float over to each other. It's more like a high-speed mechanical dance.
A very vigorous one. But here's the kicker, the really surprising part. They start this dance while they're actually anchored to the inner wall of the nucleus.
Which is just wild to think about. Imagine trying to do a complex, super fast choreography while you're tethered to a wall.
It seems impossible. So for this to work, those tethers, those anchors, have to be cut at the perfect moment.
And that really gets to the core mission of this deep dive. Is that release just, you know, a side effect of all that pulling and yanking? Or is there a dedicated molecular switch that says, okay, now you can let go?
And what happens if that switch is late? If that anchor holds on just a fraction too long? As the researchers found, it's not a minor hiccup. It causes immediate heritable genome damage.
A major discovery.
A huge discovery.
Yeah.
And the insights we're talking about today come from some incredible work by Dimitra Paunescu and her colleagues at the Max Perutz Labs, IST Austria, and Johannes Kepler University.
Yeah, this deep dive really does give us this unprecedented view into the molecular gatekeepers that protect our genomes during these really violent but essential chromosome movements.
Okay, so let's set the stage a bit. What is meiosis I really trying to do, and why all the frantic movement?
The main goal, the whole point of meiosis at first, is to get accurate chromosome segregation. You need to cut that DNA content exactly in half.
And that's impossible without something called crossover recombination, right? Exactly. And to get that recombination, the homologous chromosomes have to pair up perfectly first. The movement is what makes that pairing possible in a crowded nucleus.
So they're literally rushing around to find their partner.
That's a great way to put it. This rapid movement is really the defining feature of early meiotic prophase, talking about the leptotene and zygotene stages.
And these movements facilitate pairing and then the assembly of the synaptonemal complex, the SC.
Yep, the SC. It's like a molecular zipper that locks the two homologous chromosomes together, side by side.
And we know it's driving this, right? It's external forces.
It is. The power comes from the cytoplasm, and it's transmitted across the nuclear envelope by the Sun-Cage protein bridge. It acts like a winch, basically, pulling on the chromosome ends.
Okay, but here's the problem they have to solve first. In our normal, non-dividing cells, the chromatin is usually anchored to the wall, to the nuclear periphery.
Right, by proteins like BAF1, barrier to autointegration factor 1. And that anchorage is important. It helps organize the genome. It regulates genes.
So the cell's default state is anchored. But for meiosis, it has to completely tear down that architecture, and fast. Otherwise, when those winches start pulling,
the chromosomes are still stuck to the wall. And the big question was always, how does the cell coordinate that release?
A question this paper really answers.
It really does.
So to figure this out, they needed a really good model system. What were they working with?
Use the nematode worm, C. elegans. It's really a gold standard for this kind of work.
Why is that? What makes it so good?
Because the germline is laid out like an assembly line in the gonad tube. The cells move along at a known rate, about one cell row per hour. So you can see every stage of meiosis just by looking at a different position in the tube.
So it gives you perfect timing. But the protein they thought was the switch, this kinase called VRK1, it presented a big problem, didn't it?
A classic genetics problem. When they just knocked out the gene completely, a VRK1 null mutant, the worms were sterile. The gonads just degenerated.
So you can't study the process if it doesn't happen at all.
Exactly. They needed a way to just turn VRK1 off for a very short time, right when the chromosomes were moving the most, and then turn it back on.
That sounds incredibly tricky.
It is, but they used a really elegant tool called the auxin inducible degradation system, or AID. It let them add a chemical, auxin, and just poof, get rid of the VRK1 protein for a few hours.
Ah, so they could observe what happens when the timing fails, not when the whole system is broken from the start.
That was the key innovation. It's all about the timing.
So once they could do that, how did they actually measure the, you know, the chaos that resulted?
They used a lot of high-resolution imaging. Immunofluorescence was a big one to track key proteins.
What were they looking for specifically?
they're looking at two main things, HTP3, which is like the backbone of the chromosome, and then SYP1, which is the main part of that zipper, the synaptotonal complex.
And if they saw gaps in the SYP1 staining, that meant the zipper was broken.
Right. It meant pairing or synapsis had failed. They also used this other technique, multiplexed DNA fishish, to build these beautiful 3D maps of the chromosomes to see if they were reorganized properly.
That's all happening in the parent cell. But the real clincher, the proof that this is a guardian of the genome, came from looking at the next generation, right?
Yes, absolutely. They had to know if the damage was heritable, so they took the embryos from these worms and did long-read sequencing.
With Oxford Nanopore, ONT.
Yep, and ONT is perfect for this because it's fantastic at finding big, chunky structural variants, the exact kind of damage you'd expect from, well, from chromosomes being physically torn.
Okay, so let's get to the findings. They turn off VRK1 right in that critical window. What happens?
They found the switch. It's VRK1. Its job is to promote the release of chromatin from the nuclear periphery.
And it does that by targeting the anchor protein itself, BAF1.
Precisely. The kinase, VRK1, phosphorylates BAF1. It adds a phosphate tag that's basically a signal to let go.
And they could see this.
Oh yeah. When VRK1 was gone, they saw BAF1 protein just piled up at the nuclear periphery, stuck to the chromatin, the anchors were jammed.
And they had a really clever way to prove BAF1 was the specific problem.
It was a beautiful genetic experiment. They used RNAi to get rid of BAF1 at the same time they got rid of VRK1.
The logic being, if the problem is that BAF1 is holding on too tight, then getting rid of BAF1 altogether should fix it.
And it did. The tethering phenotype was completely rescued. It proved that VRK1's main job here is to target BAF1, specifically at one spot, serine 4, to untether the genome.
Okay, so the VRK1-BAF1 module is the release switch. What were the downstream consequences when it failed? The meiotic defects?
They were severe. Pairing was delayed. Assembling that SC zipper was delayed. They saw gaps in the zipper, even in late-stage cells.
And the cell's quality control systems noticed this.
They did. Apoptosis, programmed cell death, went way up. The cell was trying to eliminate the defective myocytes.
But some still got through. What did those oocytes look like just before fertilization?
They look like a mess. A normal, healthy oocyte has 6 distinct chromosome bodies, the 6 paired by valence.
Right.
In the VRK1 depleted oocytes, they saw an average of almost 8 bodies.
So, extra chunks of DNA.
Extra chunks. Univalence chromosomes that failed to pair at all, and just massive DNA fragments. And they saw these things called intrachromosomal bridges.
Which is DNA connecting parts of the same chromosome that shouldn't be connected.
Exactly. And they proved that making these fragments and bridges required the normal double-strand break machinery, proteins like SBO11. So it wasn't just random breakage. It was the cell's own repair process going horribly wrong.
Which brings us to the final terrifying consequence. What did the nanopore sequencing of the embryos show?
It showed shocking genomic instability. A brief failure in the parent led to massive heritable damage in the offspring.
What kind of numbers are we talking about?
A 2-fold increase in deletions overall and a 3-fold increase in duplications. But the really staggering part was the large variants, the ones over 10,000 base pairs.
Yeah.
They increased by more than 6-fold.
Wow. More than 6-fold from one brief timing error.
Yes. That's the punchline. This one molecular untethering event is absolutely critical for maintaining the integrity of the genome from one generation to the next.
It just completely reframes how you think about this. It's not just things floating around. There's a dedicated, scheduled mechanism.
It's not a side effect of movement. It's a prerequisite for safe movement. The VRK1-BAF1 phosphorylation has to happen at the exact right moment.
I like your analogy of the stage manager cutting the wires. If the wires hold when the dancer jumps.
The dancer gets hurt. That's the mechanical stress hypothesis. And the data really supports it. The over-tethering messes up pairing, which messes up the normal high-fidelity DNA repair system.
But why such big deletions and duplications? Why not small errors?
It's because the cell panics. It tries to compensate. When the precision tools fail, it brings in the emergency crew alternative repair pathways that use proteins like MUS81 and POLQ1.
And these are the bulldozers, not the scalpels.
Exactly. They fix the break, but they do a messy job. And that messiness results in these huge deletions and duplications that ONT sequencing picked up. The damage is a scar from a desperate repair attempt.
And the proof is in the timing. The worst damage happened when they depleted VRK1 right at the peak of chromosome movement.
Precisely. That cements the idea that this module is a gatekeeper against mechanical stress. It's protecting the genome from the cell's own powerful machinery.
And this has implications that go way beyond worms.
Oh, absolutely. This identifies a brand new mechanism for how large structural variants can be generated in an animal. The VRK1 BAF1 module, or something like it, is likely protecting against chromosomal abnormalities in, well, in all of us.
It's a potential source for some of the developmental issues and fertility challenges we see in humans. A key failure point.
A brand new failure point we didn't know about.
So if we pull back, the take-home message is really that this beautiful choreography of meiosis depends on a very specific timely event, VRK1 kinase tagging BAF1 to say, let go.
Right. And if that checkpoint fails, the whole process of meiotic recombination, which is supposed to ensure genetic health, actually becomes a major source of heritable genomic instability.
It turns a protective mechanism into a destructive one.
And that leaves us with this really provocative final thought, doesn't it? What does this discovery mean for understanding fertility challenges, or even the origins of de novo structural variants in humans, where we know chromosome movement is just as vigorous?
It really highlights how vulnerable our genomes are to, well, to tiny failures in molecular scheduling. How the very forces that help create life can also tear it apart without perfect regulation.
It's a profound reminder. Sometimes the biggest disasters happen when the smallest things just hold on a little too long.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
At the rim of a midnight nucleus, the skyline clings. Chromosomes press to the laminar ring. There's a tide in the envelope pulling them tight. Silent cables holding back the night. In the glow of the germline tunnel they sway, looking for a partner, but they lose their way. Every stall embracing the crowded dark leaves a fragile seam in a glowing spark. We're hanging by threads at the border of the shell, halfway between order and a silent hell. If we never learn to loosen these lines, the future breaks along the faulted spine. Let's go when the anchors fall. Spin the pairs in a careful dance. Give every break its rightful chance. If we free the heart of the cell in time, the genome walks a single line. In the rush of storm, they race, hands to the envelope, searching for a place. But when walls hold tight to the looping strands, tension carves fractures nobody plans. Bridges like ghosts between sister roads, fragments drifting where the signal erodes. A single misstep in the pairing. Breaks along the faulted spines. Cut the cords at the edge of the world. deletion, every duplicated shore, whispers of forces we can't ignore. So loosen the ties where the edges bind, let motion and repair fall back in line. Between periphery and open sky, we choose which futures live or die. Cut the cords at the edge of the world, let the chromosome stars be unfurled, guide their dance through the moving haze, keep the breaks within the mending ways, spin the pairs till the bridges are gone. No more fragments dragging futures wrong, when we free the heart of the cell in time, the gene.